Alla magi manadori. Yasura randannam braja jannaranjannam. Yamuna tera banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari. Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tera Banachari. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam. Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Asta Tarasata Sisi Man, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem Sikoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasari Sri Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinath Shama Kundarada Kundigida Govanan Ki Jai. Grantarad Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaura Bhavanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 12. I've been handed four verses, 49, 50, 51, and 52. I'll chant the Sanskrit on 49, 50, and 51, and then we'll chant responsively the Sanskrit for verse number 52. Tato param hubadaya satsargaya mano dande rishinam buriviryanam api sargam avishtritam knatva tadriddaye buyas chintayam ashakorava. Excuse me. Aho adbutam etanme vyapretas yapinit yada na hedante praja nunam Daivam atra vihaktakam. We'll all chant here. Evam yukta kritatasya. Daivam cha vikshatastada. Kasya rupam harbudvedra. Yat kayam abhikachate. Evam yukta kritastasya daivam cha vikshatastata kasya rupam abuddhidva yatkaham abhichakshate. Evam yukta kritastasya daivam chavikshatastata. Kasya rupam abudvedva yatkayam abhichakshate. Please chant. Tata, thereafter. Aparam, another. Upadaya, having accepted. Sa, he. Sagaya, in the matter of creation. Mana, mind. Dadhe, gave attention. Rishinam, of the great sages. Buri viryanam, with great potency. Api, in spite of. Sargam, the creation. Avishtritam, not extended. Gyantva, knowing. Tut, that. Hridaye, in his heart. Buya, again. Chintayam asya, he began to consider. Kaurava, O son of the Kurus. Aho, alas. Adbutam, it is wonderful. Etat, this. Me, for me. Vyapritasya, being busy. Api, although. Nityada, always. Na, does not. He, certainly. Edhante, generate. Praja, living entities. Nunam, however. Daivam, destiny. Atra, herein. Vighatakam, against. Evam, thus. Yukta, contemplating. Kritta, while doing so. Tasya, his. Daivam, supernatural power. Cha, also. Avikshata, observing. Tada, at that time. Kasya, of Brahma. Rupam, form. Abhut, became manifest. Dvidha, twofold. Yat, which is. Kayam, his body. Abhichakshate, is said to be. Translations and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, Brahma accepted another body in which sex life was not forbidden, and thus he engaged himself in the matter of further creation. Purport. In his former body, which was transcendental, affection for sex life was forbidden, and Brahma therefore had to accept another body to allow himself to be connected with sex. He thus engaged himself in the matter of creation. His former body transformed into fog, as previously described. O son of the Kurus, when Brahma saw that in spite of the presence of sages of great potency, there was no sufficient increase in population, he seriously began to consider how the population would be increased. Brahma thought to himself, alas, it is wonderful that in spite of my being scattered all over, there is still insufficient population throughout the universe. There is no other cause for this misfortune but destiny. In the final verse. While he was thus absorbed in contemplation and was observing the supernatural power, two other forms were generated from his body.
They are still celebrated. They are still celebrated as the body of Brahma. Purport. Two bodies came out from the body of Brahma. One had a mustache and the other had swollen breasts. No one can explain the source of their manifestation, and therefore, until today, they are known as Kayam, or the body of Brahma, with no indication of their relationship as son or daughter. Om Ajnanatamadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Hunmilitam Yinatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vanchakaputurubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Baheva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Srivasati Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. So, every service, every job, every occupation has aspects of it that are often overlooked, are not considered, or maybe just ignored altogether. This chapter deals with some of the, some might say less palatable, some might say less appreciated aspects of Brahma's role as the creator. It's interesting in this one verse here, even though two things in these two verses here. One is Brahma mentions that the potency of the sages is there, but no progeny is there. So Prabhupada mentions quite often that for there to be progeny, there has to be a potent man and a fertile woman. And so this is at least the one aspect is clearly there. And so Brahma's a little confused how come things aren't moving forward as the creator would expect. And then he says, and in spite of myself being scattered all over, there's still insufficient population. So this is quite a difference in us generally, if we're scattered all over, you know, scatterbrained is the term used, indicating someone that has no dridhavrata, no fixed focal point, bahushaka instead. They're going in many different directions. So according to the Gita, bahushaka is not desirable, but dridhavrata, fixed intelligence, fixed focus is. And to complete any task, we have to have that fixed focus. In Brahma's case, he scattered everywhere out of necessity because that is his focus, to create progeny in the universe through a variety of means. Purport here in this last verse, Prabhupada mentions that even though the two forms, the man and the woman, came from his body, they weren't considered son or daughter. Another difference between us and Brahma is that, you know, if we produce offspring, they're clearly our son or our daughter. In this case, and we have generally a singular method for the production of this offspring. Brahma, he's got living entities coming out of his nose, manifesting off of his body, coming from his mind, out of his forehead. So we can't come anywhere near anything like that. And as a result, this is the method of population for the universe. Now, back to my point here that every job has these different aspects of it. I was thinking about this, like back when I worked for Sacred Threads some years back, I did trade shows. And I would often win all kinds of awards for the design, for the flair of color, for the style that I would show in the presentation in the booth, these different things. Now, what wasn't taken into account was that to do this, it required me arriving there a day, sometimes 2 days early, in advance of the opening, and long hours of building this booth and putting together all the framework and everything, longer hours of steam ironing all the different product that was going to be displayed, and extra expense for all the different items that would be used for decorating and making it, and then at the end, it's all there. Now, somebody walking the trade show, they come in, oh, this is real nice, oh, great, you know, and they give you an award. Not knowing all the backstory, as the word is used, that went into producing this. Or let's look at it from another point of view, from Temple President point of view. There's many people in our community that have been Temple Presidents. And Temple President responsibility is not just attending the morning program and the festival programs, but, you know, arranging for all the services to be covered, going into panic mode when those services don't get covered and somebody doesn't show up, dealing with the local municipality managers and their rules and regulations on the expansion one may want on their building or property, removing people from the property that don't belong there that should be somewhere else, you know, and a whole laundry list of other things that people generally don't think about when they think about that position of Temple President. I remember back in the day when I was a young brahmachari, the main factor of being a temple president was the maha came first to you. The deities got their offering and all the maha was there and it goes to the temple president. Now I venture to say a temple president might get a maha tulsi leaf. At any rate, the point is that these are all things that go into the service that one executes that are not looked at. Therefore, as we read this chapter, we shouldn't be shocked, we shouldn't be surprised, or worse yet, disappointed when we read about these nitty-gritty details of the creation that Brahma has to deal with. These are aspects of what it takes to do the job he's doing. This is why it's a, you know, very elevated position, quite frankly. We should remember that although Brahma may be a personality of some times occasionally questionable decisions, we can't forget three things. Number one, he's the head of our sampradaya, plain and simple. Now there's a story, and I did some research trying to find this quote, and I remember it from years ago, the morning walk with Prabhupada, and someone was questioning Brahma's position and this and that, and he falls down and so on and so on. And Prabhupada's response was something to the effect of, he may be anything, but he's the head of our sampradaya and a damn sight better than you. Something indicating that, okay, whatever, he's the head of the sampradaya. And then the second thing to remember is that he is tainted by the mode of passion to execute the service he's doing. Creation is the mode of passion. Maintenance is the mode of goodness, and of course, destruction is the mode of ignorance. Anybody can destroy anything. Just, you know, well, I don't want to, anyway, don't want to poke any fingers at any kids, but, you know, they have a certain ability, you know, you just turn them loose anywhere and things get a little chaotic. You know, you walk into the bedroom, it's like, what happened? Was there a tornado in here? You know, that's a line every parent has used when they walk into the room of their child. It's like, my God, do you know where anything goes? So, you know, that destructive mood, that's the mode of ignorance. The creative mood, that takes a certain passion, a certain drive, a certain desire to get there. And then maintaining things is just keeping everything at the status quo. So most all of us are a mixture of these three different aspects. Brahma, in particular, is the manifestation of this mode of passion. He's the predominant personality for that mode. And this requires so many different types of activities. And the third thing is that sex life is a part of the process of creation, plain and simple. Now, back when I used to do the Polish festival tour, one of my favorite services to have done in this lifetime of devotional service, I'd be sitting in the question and answer booth for, you know, long stretches of time, just having a grand old time with all the kids. And the question would inevitably come out. Somebody raised their hand, we'd call yes. They say, I heard the Hare Krishnas don't believe in sex. So I would always say with a chuckle, well, let me see, I have three kids, I have five grandkids, somebody had sex. then I would go into a little more deep explanation as to what the reality of our philosophical view on that subject is. So, you know, if we're going to talk about Brahma, we're going to talk about the creation, we're going to end up having to deal with this subject matter because this is how things are created in the material world. Now, on higher levels in the material world, as I mentioned with Brahma, he can manifest personalities from his mind, out of his, you know, all different times. But those of us that are limited, this is the process of creation that takes place here. It's just the reality. So we can understand that the personalities that are procreating the universe have to deal with this subject matter. Now, Brahma, as I mentioned, on more than one occasion has made, an error in judgment, and it's backfired on him. For instance, one day he was observing Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys at Govardhan on the banks of the river. And Krishna was speaking to his friends. And Krishna said, "My dear friends, just see this spot we're at. It's very nice for lunch and for playing on the soft sandy banks of the river. You can see how the lotus flowers are in the water. They're beautifully open and how they're distributing their fragrance everywhere. The chirping of the birds along with the cooing of the peacocks." Cooing of the peacocks, that's a sound I miss in Vrindavan. "There was much conversation this past Kartik when I was there. There's a spot on the corner of what's now become the second busiest intersection in all of Vrindavan where the Krishna Balaram tree previously resided. Right now it's just one or the other. I don't know if it's Krishna or Balaram, but and there used to be a park there. Not really a park, it was a forest. It was a vast area of trees, and there were hundreds and hundreds of peacocks there. Now there's a six-story glass mall with a gym and a coffee shop and a New York clothing store and so on and so on. So no more cooing of the peacocks. At any rate, and the whispering of the leaves in the trees, all of this combines and gives a beautiful sound vibration for us to enjoy. This is notable. Krishna is observing this and thinking, okay, boys, it's a nice place for us to have a good time. Our efforts in this world are to restrict our sense enjoyment. Krishna's efforts are to enhance it amongst his friends. So then he says, you know, let us take our lunch right here because it's already a little late and we're all feeling a bit hungry. Again, Krishna's looking out for his friends. This is what you want. Hey, it's about lunchtime, isn't it? You know, I work with a guy that's extremely regulated when he takes his lunch. And if it's 3 minutes after, I'm like, hey, isn't it behind your lunch schedule, you know, because he's that regulated. So, you know, Krishna's noticing, hey, boys, we haven't had lunch yet. So, you know, it's time. Let's let the calves stay near us. They can drink the water from the river right here. And we'll engage in lunch taking, and the calves will engage in eating soft grass, and we'll just have a great time here. So when the cowherd boys heard this proposal from Krishna, they were very, very happy. They said, yes, certainly, let us all take lunch here at this spot. And so they let the calves loose. Apparently, they kind of keep them tied up because calves are a little, you know, frolicky. So they loosen them up, let them have the grass on the banks of the river, because the grass that grows on the banks of the river gets good water, and it grows in a kind of a muddy kind of soil, so it's very soft also. So it's a very nice place for the cows to be eating and then drinking from the water there. And so they all sat down on the ground there and formed a circle with Krishna in the middle. We've all seen that famous picture on the cover of the old Hare Krishna cookbook, and wonderful, wonderful painting. I think it was on one of the first BTGs I ever distributed back in the day. At any rate, so they're all looking at Krishna, and somehow or another, Krishna's looking each of them in the face, face to face. Now, if I'm going to look at the face of each of you here in the class, I have to turn my head and make a point to, you know, but Krishna's sitting in one spot, and everybody thinks Krishna's just looking at me. This is the amazing thing about Krishna. So, you know, Krishna's there in the center, and you know, it just appeared like a beautiful lotus flower with all the leaves around it like this. And so all the boys, they collected, you know, leaves and flowers and the barks of trees and, you know, decorated themselves with them. And if it was something edible, they mixed it in with their lunches. And, you know, they all just had a grand old time, you know. sitting there eating lunch with Krishna, as we can imagine, if you can just kind of focus your mind on this, you know, picture, you know, and Krishna's sitting there in the middle of them all. He's got his flute pushed into his belt, you know, he's got his belt on tight and his bugle and his cane to the side. And, you know, he's holding a lump of food that in his hand that's yogurt and butter and rice and pieces of fruit mixed together. When this gets made, we sometimes refer to it as a cowherd boy salad. A little bit of yogurt, a little bit of rice, a little bit of fruit like this, you know, very, very tasty. You can eat it right out of the palm of your hand. So in this way, everything's going on. Now, Brahma's observing all this. You know, he's up there in his swan plane looking at what's going on. Now, the calves were nearby, but they kind of, as I mentioned about calves being a little, you know, moving about, frolicking and all, they went a little bit deeper into the forested area looking for new grass, which is kind of interesting because, you know, the best grass is right there on the riverbank where it's all soft. In the forest, it's not getting all of the nutrients and it's under the trees. And anyway, so they're going and looking for the different grasses and all of a sudden they're out of sight. Now the boys, they noticed these calves aren't close by. And so they became a little bit afraid for their safety. And what do? They call out, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna! Krishna, Krishna!" Now, Krishna, being their best friend, being the super soul in the heart, in addition to that, not known to the cowherd boys, he didn't want their pleasant lunch engagement to be disturbed. So thoughtful. No, you just take a meal. I'll go do. No, you sit there. I'll take care of it. So he told them like that. Don't interrupt your lunch. You're just continuing. I'll go and find the calves. I'll personally go do it. This is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he enters into such a role as this, that he takes up these menial tasks. No, I'm God. You boys go find the calves. I'm just going to sit here. No, it wasn't his mood. No, you just enjoy your lunch. Keep eating that yogurt and fruit, and I'll go find the calves for you. Same thing with Arjuna. You know, driving the chariot. What business does the Supreme Personality of Godhead have driving a chariot except for the pleasure of his devotees? So at any rate, he started to go out. Now, as I mentioned, Brahma was observing all this, as were a variety of other demigods. So Brahma was a little surprised how this little boy named Krishna could act so wonderfully. Now, he had been informed, it doesn't mention what source, but we can choose a variety of sources, even from the heart, Rita. But at any rate, he had come to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this little form as a cowherd boy. But he thought, you know, why is he, you know, this menial role like this? I mean, you know, I wonder if there's more glories to his activities. So he decided to test Krishna. Now, if we examine that sentence right there, there's the failure right there in that sentence. Brahma decided to test Krishna. So at any rate, he did that. And as we all know, he stole all the calves and all the cowherd boys while Krishna was away looking for the balance of the calves. There's a nice place where this pastime took place, and a nice tirtha. And we visited there one year during Kartik, and I remember Badahari and I were down in this cave. Not a cave like we think of a cave, you know. Cave is a broad term when it's used in some of these regards here. Not like the caves on top of Govardhan Hill that are actual caves. There's one cave on Govardhan Hill, the locals say you can fit about 50 people in it. It's quite large. It's got a disguised front. They've built it with bricks, like a doorway, but covered it with in such a way that it looks like boulders. You know, it's really, that area is called Saptakunva, the seven caves. They're up on the top there. It's down near, after Balaram Stali and before Pumchari. At any rate, so Brahma stole these cows and calves and put them into a cave. Now, Krishna is looking for the cows and calves. He can't find them. Cowherd boys and the calves, and he can't find them. And so he comes back and sees that where everybody was sitting eating lunch, there's nobody there. Now, if we look at the comparison between Krishna and Lord Brahma, there isn't one. There, as it says in the Bhagavatam, there's very little in comparison between the two because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could immediately understand what had happened. He could immediately understand, okay, Brahma's pulling a power play here. You know, sometimes somebody gets a position of authority and they falsely think that their level of influence is greater than it may be. You see this a lot in the corporate world. Actually, I had a direct experience with this. We got a new district manager where I work several months ago. And he came in and saw something in the store, said, I don't like this change at all. Had it all changed. And then it somehow or another got further up the food chain that this had been done. He was like, no, you can't change that. You don't have that kind of thing. Put everything back. So Brahma, in the same way here, is kind of acting outside of his role. And Krishna could understand this. So he thought to himself, Brahma has stolen all the cowherd boys and all the cows. How can I return back to Vrindavan at the end of the day? The cows, they'll be crying because their calves aren't there, and the mothers will just be devastated because their boys aren't there. What can I do? So it didn't take him, you know, that long to just expand himself into the forms of all these cowherd boys and calves. Not just to expand himself into them, but identically, to the point that no one could tell the difference. Not even the mothers. Now, you know, you can try and get one over on a mom, but, you know, it doesn't usually work. And mothers will immediately be able to understand who is their child and who's not. But Krishna's duplication of the calves and the cowherd boys was so perfect that the mothers were completely, we could say tricked, but brought into the ruse that these were actually their children and their calves. So much so, and because they were Krishna's expansions, that their love for these expansions of Krishna as their children and calves, their love increased. It manifested greater degrees. Now, Balaram observed this. And, you know, Balaram, he said to Krishna, he said, you know, I'm noticing here that the mood of the mothers and the cows is much more steeped in love than usual. What's going on? This is the interesting thing about brothers, you know, they kind of know the mood, you know. There are many reflections in normal, we can say, relationships between siblings and family members and parents and children that we see portrayed in these pastimes of Krishna because that's what they are. So at the request of Balaram, Krishna explained the whole story, how Brahma had kind of crossed the line and stolen all the cows and the calves. And so he expanded himself so that the people of Vrindavan would not be in any anxiety, so that there wouldn't be any distress for the cows. Because when the cows are distressed, they don't give milk. If you're a cowherd community and the cows don't give milk, you don't get any milk, you don't get any yogurt, you don't get any yogurt, you don't get any ghee, you don't get any ghee, you don't get to cook nice cauliflower pakoras. Everything goes to hell. I popped home for lunch the other day and my wife surprised me with fresh pakoras right out of the ghee. Now, that's a lunchtime surprise. At any rate, so while Krishna and Balaram were discussing this back and forth, Brahma returned after a moment's interval. This is according to his duration of time. And he had reflected, this may not have been the right thing to do. Maybe I made a mistake here. Now, this is interesting in two aspects. One, because Brahma's time frame, and now the Bhagavad Gita gives a very, very detailed explanation of how many hours, how many days, how many years it all equals out, you know, to Brahma's, you know, 12-hour period. Brahma Samhita also mentions like this. So the time frame is much different. As the analogy is, the further you get away from object, the less impact the immediate time factor has. There was that famous book, Around the World in 80 Days, because it took 80 days to go by air balloon around the world. Or nowadays, you get in the satellite and you can go around the world in the course of, you know, a couple of 3 hours, whatever it is. So the further you get from something, the less relevant the time factor is. So Brahma's moment of, shall we say, reconciliation was 1 year down here. So he's observed this and thinking, probably wasn't the best thing to do, you know. What's that phrase, playing with fire? When you play with fire, unless you're really expert at playing with fire, you're going to get burned. So Krishna is, after all, the master of Lord Brahma. And so by taking away the calves and the boys, he had committed an offense. So he was quite anxious about this and thinking, well, I haven't really had them for that long. He came back within a moment's time to replace them. This was his intention. He actually wanted to see, first of all, what's going on while I've taken them. You know, what's Krishna doing? I mean, how's he making amends for the fact that I've taken them all? But this was part of the illusion, Brahma Vimohan, as they call it, that he was experiencing. So he came and he saw, there's Krishna, there's all the calves, there's all the cowherd boys, they're still sitting there having lunch together, Krishna in the middle with their little palmfuls of yogurt and fruit and rice, and the calves are still over there eating the grass by the Jamuna, but wait a minute, I took them all. So he went back to check. Yeah, they're still in this mystic state that I put them in this cave. Okay. So then he came back. So how is this group of cowherd boys and calves so similar to the ones I took? So he was actually deluded by his own mystic efforts. Because let's face it, it's a mystic skill to be able to take an entire collective of people and just make them disappear. You know, you've got your David Copperfields and your Siegfried and Roys that do these tricks on stage, and there's a gimmick to it. We all know. At one point in my childhood, I was a stage assistant to a magician, and so I kind of got to learn how some of these inside tricks are done. Not big grand stuff like they do in Vegas or whatever, but at any rate, there's a trick behind everything. The mystic abilities to do this on a large scale are there on higher beings. So he began to think like this, you know, a little confused about what he'd done. And Krishna could understand, okay, now Brahma's confused. So at this point, Krishna manifested these cows, these calves, and cowherd boys in their Vishnu form expansions of himself. And then Brahma could clearly understand, these aren't the original cowherd boys and calves that I took. This isn't, you know, the ones that I snatched. These are all expansions from Krishna. The ones that I stole are still sleeping under my mystic power. And these are all the immediate expansions of my Lord. So, you can just picture the scene, Brahma standing there, realizing that everything he's just executed in the last, let's say from his time frame, 5 minutes or so, has completely fallen apart, that Krishna has outwitted him, that he isn't the supreme in charge that he thought he was, and that his activities are completely limited by the senses, by the mind, by the circumstances, and he realizes that I'm merely a puppet. I'm just a puppet with no independent power. But I can only act according to the desire and the whims of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Brahma, he's got, you know, Goddess of Learning is his consort, and he's considered to be the highest authority on Vedic knowledge. He's completely perplexed. This extraordinary potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, even in the mundane world, or especially in the mundane world, an elevated personality like Brahma cannot understand the mystic potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What was that book we did at Bala Books? Master of All Mystics. It was a great kid's book. So not only did Brahma fail to understand that, but he was perplexed by this display of supreme mystic potency of the Personality of Godhead. And it mentions that when he was relieved of this level of perplexity and confusion that he had, it was like being awoken from a sleeping state. I was reading the other day in the Activities of Householders from the Vishnu Purana that when one wakes in the morning, they shouldn't linger in the bed. You know, this was the purpose of inventing the snooze button, right? Take 5 more minutes. Now snooze buttons give you 8 minutes. Some snooze buttons give you 12 minutes. You know, we don't want a snooze button. The minute we wake up, we should be able to immediately get out of bed. Shri Kirti tells how Srila Prabhupada, when he would sleep, he would just immediately open his eyes and he was full consciousness right there. You know how sometimes we wake up, we're a little groggy, we get up and stumble to the bathroom to brush our teeth or, you know, whatever other activities take place in there. And, you know, oh okay, I took a cold shower, okay, I'm awake now, you know. So this sleeping state was completely removed once Brahma realized the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what did Brahma do? Brahma immediately got down off of his great swan carrier. Now, this is another interesting fact of the higher planets. You know, there's a lot of concern about the fuel cost and the expense of flying jets here and there and this and that. And we don't have any problems with that in the higher planets. Just hop on a swan and off you go. So, you know, Brahma gets down from his swan carrier and he goes before Krishna and he falls down, it mentions, like a golden stick. Golden stick, full dunderbats. Falling down just like when a stick drops, you know, it doesn't kind of go down easily. It's just... There was one Brahmacharya, I remember from the old days, fall like a stick. So he would literally just bang his head on the floor and it'd beat a sound. And sometimes he'd have a mark. One time he actually broke his skin and was bleeding. You know, we can be a little gentle in how we fall like a stick. But the idea is that he fell like this. So Brahma fell down before the Lord in this manner and offered full respects. And... all four helmets of Brahma touched the feet of the Personality of Godhead. Now, of course, here we only have a four-headed Brahma, but as we know from that famous story, when Brahma went to see Lord Vishnu and Lord Vishnu sent the message back, ask which Brahma? And Brahma's like, which Brahma? Here again, the first thing that Brahma's reaction was, his default position was arrogance. Which Brahma? This Brahma. What, are there more than one Brahma? At which point the Lord called all the different Brahmas with multitudes of heads and responsibilities to creating a universe is much bigger than this one. So at any rate, all four heads touched. And not only that, but all four sets of eyes, which means eight eyes, all shed tears which washed the feet of the Lord, Padyaseva, with his own tears. This is really quite amazing. And then he stood up, folded his hand, smearing his hands over his eyes to remove the tears, and began offering prayers out of great humility, respect, and attention. So this was the culmination of Brahma's misstep in regards to the cowherd boys. Now this incident is referred to by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Narada is going about the universe trying to find out who is the perfect recipient of the mercy of Krishna. And he finds someone, oh, no, it's not me, you go to this person. Oh, no, it's not me, you go. So he sent to Lord Brahma. I believe it was Indra that sent him to Lord Brahma. So he goes to Lord Brahma and he begins to glorify Lord Brahma as you would a respectable person or an honorable person when you come before them. What to speak of a highly advanced spiritualist? You glorify them. Their activities, You praise their functions. You say good words about their works. So in this way, Narada comes before Brahma and is glorifying him this way. And Brahma, it mentions in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, covers his ears. Now he's got multiple heads and multiple ears and multiple hands, so this would have been quite a sight. But at any rate, he covers his ears. And he says, no. I am just the servant. I am just the servant. So this is one of those times where the clarity of Brahma's position is very fixed in his own mind. Very fixed in his own level of realization that I'm just a servant. I'm not some big creator. I'm not the progenitor of the whole universe. I'm not in charge of populating everything. I'm not responsible for creating sex life amongst all the species. I'm just a servant. This is what our real mood should be. Dasa, 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 anudasa. Servant of the servant and so forth. So he actually had to make an effort to overcome his anger. He became angry at being glorified in this way by Narada. And he began to scold Narada. Now keep in mind, Narada is one of Brahma's sons. And he says, you know, what you're saying to me is very unpleasant for my ears. I don't want to hear this. I'm holding fast to the various designations of my position. I'm always bewildered by the agency of Maya. I'm thinking I'm a guru, I'm the creator, I'm the grandsire of the world, and that I've appeared from Krishna's lotus navel. This is another one of his false identities of arrogance, is that I came out of the navel of the Lord. How'd you get born? You know, he's thinking in that way, that even my birth is glorious. And of course, we know none of our births is glorious. He said, thinking I'm a true ascetic, a true worshiper, this defies my position as the guru. I'm especially hankering only for freedom from Mahakala, from the great time factor. This is his prayer. I only want freedom from the time factor. Because this time factor is causing the destruction of my very existence, my very planet. So he acknowledges this, you know, in his very precarious position due to the responsibility of universal management. This is one of the tricks of being a manager, regardless of whether it's in a spiritual institution like our society or in a mundane institution or corporation, is to not come off as I'm it. I make the decisions around here. I'm in charge of everything. No, we understand that we're simply the servant of Srila Prabhupada. Or in the case of the corporate world, the servant of the shareholders or whoever like this. So Brahma continues and he says, devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord remains very far from me. Very far from me. This is true humility. Until I erase my numerous offenses at his lotus feet, I can't even imagine possessing any devotion. This is a very telling statement by Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma acknowledges, I've committed so many offenses against Krishna. I mean, we've just mentioned one here, but there are other times. There are other times. And until I get rid of these offenses, I can't have any devotion to Krishna. Now then, Brahma says to Narada, not only that, but I've given various demons an assortment of boons. Of course, the most famous boon is to Hiranyakasipu. Hiranyakasipu, I don't want to be killed in the day or night. Okay, granted. And land or the sea. Okay, granted. And then on and on and on and on and on. After Nrisingadeva appeared and killed Hiranyakasipu, he went to Lord Brahma and he chastised him. He said, you're giving these boons that make it really difficult for me, you know. I have to come up with this particular incarnation that's never been seen before in the doorway, not at the day or the, you know, like this. He says, so don't give boons like this. And then Brahma says, in spite of that, I've given boons to all kinds of demons. And he gives a whole list of everything. And then he says to Narada, he says, and just recently, this gives us an indication here again of the difference in time factor. He says, just recently, I got myself in trouble stealing away Krishna's friends and cows during his lunch activities in Vrindavan. This was just a display of my own illusory energy. And then he says, although I am such an offender, still, I received the great fortune of being able to go to Krishna's beloved Brajabhumi. There, I became so satisfied simply by having the darshan of his lotus face and his soft, natural smile. This should be our mood if we have the good fortune to go to Vrindavan. It's a little tough nowadays. Vrindavan's quite developed, quite a bit of traffic. The intersection that I was describing before was where my apartment was that I was staying. And from 3 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night, all four directions were backed up for cars as far as the eye could see, with constant honking. Anybody that's friend of India knows that the honking of the car horn is mandatory. There's that famous story, Prabhupada was driving with the devotees and the car horn was broken. Prabhupada was shocked, how are we going to drive? So we got a plate and a stick and held it outside the window and banged it. So this making of noise, like, hey, I'm here, look, catch me. What's that famous Dustin Hoffman line? Hey, I'm walking here. You know, so you got to make noise to be noticed if you're in the traffic there. So we may see that as Vrindavan now, but if by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and the instruction of Shastra, we can develop Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena and get a little bit of pure vision, we can see the real Vrindavan that's there. So when we get to see that, we should be very grateful. And this is what Brahma's saying here. Although I'm such an offender, which all of us are, still I received the good fortune to go to Brajabhumi. But then Brahma throws a caveat in there, which is an important lesson to us as well. However, when somebody starts a sentence with however, it means they're about to give a exception to what they just described. However, fearing I may commit an offense again if I stay too long in Brajabhumi, I left that place. I have a standard when I go to Vrindavan. I always imagine in my mind I'll stay in Vrindavan for, you know, ever and ever and ever, whatever. But when I get to the point, you know, because there's a lot of rickshaw and car traffic where there probably shouldn't be rickshaws and cars, and they come precariously close to human forms. There's a, Smart Heart knows this very well, as does our from Pundarik there, you know. So, I mean, it's, you know, they just... So you always carry a stick with you in Vrindavan as a, you know, little sign to the monkeys. Don't mess here. I got a stick. Of course, the monkeys aren't really impressed by the sticks. But at any rate, so when I get to the point to where I want to take that stick and hit the cars that are getting too close to me, I realize, okay, time to go home. And that's usually about the fourth or fifth week of being there. So Brahma's saying, you know, I'm an offender, and I've been allowed to go to Vrindavan, but I'm fearful I might commit offenses if I stay here too long, so I'm leaving. So then he concludes to Narada. He says, oh, Narada, how much more can I tell you of my misfortune? I think this is enough. So this is Brahma's response to the glorification of Narada. Oh, you're the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. No, no, no. Do you not know my story? Have you not heard about all the missteps that I did? Have you not heard about my misfortune? Anyway, I've told you enough. This one bit of information I've given you should be sufficient to dispel that doubt. So we can conclude with the realization that Brahma may engage in necessary, even questionable activities as are described in this chapter, by his coming in contact with the mode of creative passion. But what we should take away from it is his amazing humility and internal realization of the Lord's true position and his true position as a servant of the Lord. So this is a little broader view of some of these topics discussed in this chapter of Brahma's creating the material universe and the obstacles and difficulties he runs into. So we're going to finish there. I'm going to apologize for not taking questions, but I've got another appointment shortly after this. So thank you very much. We pray that we may not fall under this illusion that Lord Brahma has, and that somehow or another we'll always be able to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much.